This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Well, I learned a trick that what you do when you get to 70 is you subtract. So I'm actually 60. You know, and you can fool yourself about that. And I feel fine personally. I start getting pains when I think about the season we had with the White Sox.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the former Cubs player Tony La Russa, who most recently was a manager and was a manager with the White Sox, and he has turned 80 years old. He was 80 as of October 4th.
Yes, 3 weeks ago, Tony turned 80 very quietly. We were not invited to the party if they had one. But
did
Tony,
you know we played for the Cubs? You turned and looked at me when I said
I did. Yeah, I remember that.
He was a pinch runner.
I remember that.
He was a pinch runner. That was it. His only appearance in like the 1960s or so.
Ex-Cub wins division with White Sox. That's kind of the old story. And I did kind of find that interesting as your way of referencing Tony La Russa.
I was making a joke.
Yeah, you were. And that was funny. And it was good. Tony La Russa, also a man whose proximity to Jerry Reinsdorf makes his his words kind of resonate more, especially in the last 10 days or so, and because of his proximity to Dave Stewart, the pitcher for the Oakland A's, former pitcher for the A's, who Tony La Russa managed and remains good friends with. So when he appeared on WGN, naturally, he was asked about recent reports that Jerry Reinsdorf wants to sell the White Sox.
Well, I think, because, you know, the conversation was with Dave Stewart, one of the great pitchers with the Oakland A's, and he's trying to be part of an organization that probably acquires an expansion club, maybe in Nashville. So I think they were just talking baseball and the speculation. Jerry's White Sox guy, and he's going to see us get better.
Okay, so Jerry's a White Sox guy, wants to see him get better, but that is Tony La Russa confirming the report.
Well, he's confirming that they spoke. He isn't confirming that they spoke about selling the White Sox. They spoke about getting an expansion team and how do you go about it. Jerry, a very powerful owner. It's interesting.
Okay, you're right. You're splitting hairs here, though.
I am splitting
hairs. You're keen semantics here. You're being semantic.
But I think you have to be when you're dealing with the kind of information that nothing has been confirmed in terms of a White Sox sale. And I just want to make sure we don't portray it.
We're not portraying it that way. We're definitely going to be clear here and specific. But he did confirm that he spoke with Dave Stewart. Dave Stewart is in charge of a group. I don't think it's called Music City Group anymore, but I think he's in charge of a group that has been ambitious and open about their desire to bring baseball to Nashville. So I don't think you need to be a detective or an investigative reporter here to connect the dots.
I am not trying to, I'm not shooting anything down. I'm just saying we should take him for what he said as opposed to feeling that the Sox are on their way to Nashville. That's all.
I don't want to suggest the Sox are on their way to Nashville. And I think that's a quantum leap. But I do think that we can incrementally talk about each step of this story. Did Jerry Reinsdorf speak to Dave Stewart, who wants to move a team to Nashville? The answer is yes.
Tony La Russa confirms that he did speak to him.
Yes.
But the story that was in The Athletic said that he spoke to him about selling the White Sox. It was the first time we've heard Jerry talk about selling the White Sox. Now, the Sox have not confirmed that, and in fact, there was a pushback about that. I don't know. I mean, am I being too
no. That's fair. No, that's fair. And I don't want to suggest anything other than that. I just feel like when you look at this story, that the blanket denial that this was unsourced and untrue or just a rumor, the rumor began because they did have a conversation with somebody who was involved with wanting to bring baseball to Nashville, talking to an owner who is presiding over the chairman of an organization that had historically bad season.
But in fairness, you could also, if you wanted to, you could say Dave Stewart has also talked about bringing a women's soccer team to Nashville. Maybe he was just asking him for a scouting report on Laura Ricketts, who is a part owner of the Red Stars.
How do you hear with your head in the sand? So naturally, again, Tony La Russa on with Pat Tomasulo on WGN was asked about his relationship with the most talked about owner in Chicago.
He really has gotten beat up, gotten a major blame. And the fact is, you hire people in the front office, major league manager, players to play the game, and he's at their mercy. I think he's one of the finest owners. He's done more for baseball, minor leagues, executives, and players with the way he's been fair. Everybody loves working for him. Not Jerry's fault that we played like crap. We're all bound and determined to improve it. In fact, I think you're going to see a major improvement next year.
So it's Chris Getz's fault, Tony? No, it's Pedro's fault.
It's Pedro's fault.
Okay.
He's the scapegoat.
Yeah, you got rid of him.
Yeah.
So. Is that really a question?
And that's not from this morning's interview, right? That's Brandon being Brandon. Thank you, Brandon.
Fun. Yeah. But I mean, really, if you're going to defend what happened this year with the White Sox and say that it wasn't Jerry's fault because it was the guys that he hired. Well, I mean, he did hire the guys, right? He hired he got rid of Rick Hahn, who had hired Pedro, and of course Kenny Williams, who was there forever, and he promoted Chris Getz. And if you're saying that somehow the people in charge didn't do things right, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to argue about it, but you did hire Chris Getz. So I just think that we're playing semantics all the way around.
It is very much a matter of semantics. And I think that when you talk about the things that may, I'm not speaking for you because I'm not a diehard Sox fan, but I think that when you look at it from the perspective of trying to understand what's going on and what the inconsistencies might be, the one thing that I think stands out to me, trying to be objective here, is that it bothered me a little bit that when Chris Getz was hired, the idea was that it was because
get you better faster.
The continuity factor. And then as you put on your White Sox jacket proudly, and I love that you're still loyal to the cause, but I think that when Chris Getz was hired, it was because of his proximity to Jerry's, to the organization. He was already in the organization, so it would be quicker rebuild. And now, a year later, well, it's much worse than people thought, and it's not going to be a quick fix. And so now you have a first-time general manager overseeing a massive project, and I think you wonder, and it's fair to wonder, if that lack of experience will hamper him in the rebuild. Some people may argue the other thing, is that he's got fresh eyes and a new approach and energy, and he's hired the right guys, and he has hired some very qualified executives. But the lack of experience is something that, until they start to move in the right direction and show some tangible progress, I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, and I think that, again, I'm not here to beat up on Chris Getz, but I do think that if you look at the World Series, you can see some of the White Sox fingerprints on it. That Edmund ended up being the player of the NLCS, right, with the Dodgers, and he's a guy that went from St. Louis to the Dodgers in the trade that the White Sox made that brought Michael Kopech to L.A., and the Sox got three minor leaguers, one of whom Miguel Vargas played this year, was bad, wasn't very good. One guy has a broken leg, right? And then the other guy is a I'm not being mean. I'm saying they traded Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham and Michael Kopech.
It doesn't fill you with confidence heading into an offseason that should be transformational.
Right.
Because if you are going to trade Garrett Crochet, as we think they will, if you're going to shop Luis Robert Jr. as we think they should, then you want to have confidence in your general manager to be able to get the most for those two assets, because those are two very prized assets. You could make the argument to keep both. I wouldn't, but I think you could make that argument. I would keep one or the other. I would probably keep Crochet and extend him and trade Luis Robert Jr. But I don't know that they're going to lean in that direction. Yeah. They're likely to trade Crochet. They were talking on Inside the Clubhouse over the weekend. Ryan McGuffey had a couple good Cubs scenarios for the White Sox. I don't know if they go there. The Orioles are a pretty good fit with prospects and with talent. I just think that they're going to find a taker for Garrett Crochet.
Well, I think if you look at the deal that was cut at the trade deadline that we just talked about, I think Major League Baseball teams should be lining up to make a deal with Chris Getz. And that is not an insult. That's just a statement of fact. I don't know that they're going to be able to get. I don't know that they're going to win a deal, David. And that's the problem I have when we start talking about who they should trade and who they shouldn't. I don't have enough evidence to believe that they're going to win a deal. And they don't even need to win a deal. Just break even.
I think breaking even would be
an improvement.
Based on what we saw at the trade deadline, would be an improvement. I'm very curious in terms of the momentum, in terms of the confidence that you have in the organization to do the smart thing. Their hire, their managerial hire, is important in that way, because you want to be nodding your heads in agreement when you hear the announcement, or when you read the release, or when you see the manager introduced. And I just don't know if you'll be nodding your head in agreement or searching Google to find out exactly where his last move was and who this is that they're bringing into the Sox organization.
Are you surprised that they don't appear to be more ambitious? And by that, I simply mean, you think about the people that are out there that have managed before, that have a track record, versus guys that you're projecting to take a step up.
Well, yes, I think I'm a little naturally disappointed that Terry Francona returned to managing, and it wasn't in Chicago.
Yes.
He chose the Reds.
Michael Jordan's manager.
I understand. Exactly. A guy who respects Jerry Reinsdorf. We heard him say nice things on a podcast about a month ago about Jerry. So when Terry Francona decides to come back to the dugout, the fact that he's not here leaves you a little disappointed. The three guys that I continue to mention with experience that I wonder if the Sox are even considering: David Ross, David Bell, and Skip Schumacher.
So that's very interesting you brought that subject up. Let's talk about that for one second. Did David Ross make a mistake by not taking that Yankees bench job?
Because they're in the World Series, wonder that?
Because they are in the World Series. Because if David Ross were there, we'd be hearing from him. He would be on everyone's mind. There would be the possibility of him being interviewed for any opening. It's David Ross has not been involved in baseball. In fact, we haven't even heard what he has to say about everything that happened to him. And I just wonder if he, and listen, people do things for 1,000 reasons, and I don't pretend to know David's heart or what he's doing or what his life situation is, if there's anything that he wanted to be more involved in his kids' life. I have no idea what it might be. But I just wonder, as we sit here now with the Yankees in the World Series, would he not be a very attractive candidate had he an inside track on a job and maybe a certain free agent possibility?
Well, I think that's a fair question, but I think it also assumes that the last year when David Ross was being paid handsomely not to manage.
Yeah.
So we're talking about nearly $3 million or so, probably to stay
good work
at home in Florida, to be part of his family's lives, his kids' lives more so and more invested. Maybe that is exactly what he needed at this point of his life. I don't know. I think it's a good point. If David Ross were the bench coach of a team that won the American League pennant, you better believe that he would be at the forefront of most of these conversations about the next manager wherever. But there are only two openings. So that's the other part of it, too. I think there are only two openings. He might have been mentioned in Cincinnati more prominently, but I still think they would have gone with Francona.
I think Dave Roberts would be out of a job if he doesn't win the World Series. That's a joke.
I don't think he will, but if he would...
You want him out of a
job. Well, if he wouldn't have gotten to the World Series, I think I would have been one of those guys kind of thinking, yes, I could understand why they'd want to move on. David Ross is somebody that if I were a general manager of a team, whether I was rebuilding or on the threshold of a championship, I would want to talk to him because of his experience, because he has done the job at a high level and had some success. So, yeah.
Would you, if you were David Ross, would you want the White Sox job?
Depends how badly you want to get back into it. Do you just want to get back into it because you want to get back into it? Do you have better options? If it's important to you to just be a manager again, yes, I would definitely be aggressive in pursuing that opportunity.
So Skip Schumacher, you brought him up. Does he want the White Sox job?
My sense would be that if he did, he'd be hired by now, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand the hesitation there.
He's the manager of the year.
He's also Tony La Russa's guy.
And maybe he needs a year off himself.
Man, I suppose.
As opposed to trying to lose 100 games.
Well, it's a tough challenge.
Only 100 games,
it's a tough challenge,
yeah,
but I think that if you're in competitive professional sports, you embrace these kinds of challenges rather than resist them. I think you're more likely to see somebody, unless you're Buck Showalter and maybe he just wants back into the game. If you're maybe that's what kept Terry Francona away. He didn't see a 3-year rebuild in his plans at this stage of his life and career. And I get that. He's a made man. He's an accomplished championship caliber manager. Those guys I could see avoiding this situation. But if you have yet to win and you still want to get back into it, this would be to me something that you could talk yourself into attacking.
So when I say that I'm surprised they're not more ambitious with getting someone who has managed before or getting someone with a track record, am I not taking into account the fact that the job might not be as attractive as some people would find it? In other words, you are one of the managers in Major League Baseball, but you're also walking into a situation where you say maybe it takes you a few years and there are no kind of guarantees as to whether or not you're going to be the guy that leads the way to the promise.
We're talking a lot about optics here, right?
Yes.
So we're talking about optics, and the optics are terrible right now for the Chicago White Sox organization. Number one, you're coming off a historically bad season. Number two, you're in a ballpark that has not been full recently, and you're regularly at the bottom of the attendance game, and that's not insignificant if you're considering going to a franchise. Number three, you wonder about the future of the franchise in that ballpark or in this city because of the reports that you're reading. And if you're a managerial candidate, maybe you have some connections in the game, but you also are looking at these things and forming perceptions based on those optics.
So you're saying if you like hip hop, if you like hard metal, you don't want to go to Nashville.
Stop with the Nashville. I'm already being accused of like
kidding.
The 847 is saying that, come on, Haw, expansion team means new team, not the White Sox moving. You're trying to be too clickbait. It's not a good look. I don't think we're trying to, first of all, I don't know what clickbait means on a radio program or a television program on the Chicago Sports Network. I don't know how that translates, but we did draw the distinction. Nashville, or the group that Dave Stewart is leading, he wants a expansion team in Nashville. But he did have a conversation with Jerry Reinsdorf that we're aware of.
Jerry's a mover and shaker in MLB.
Yes.
Right?
So
second most
you think Dave Stewart was looking for advice?
Owner? I don't know. I hope he wasn't looking to take the White Sox to Nashville. How's that? 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned, and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
There's a lot going on. A
lot going on. So we just talked a little bit about the White Sox, and we should let you know that Rob Manfred, who is the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he was on FS1 with our guy Danny Parkins, and Danny asked him about the White Sox. He described the White Sox as one of the anchor teams in Chicago. He also said that he expects there to be two teams in Chicago. So he kind of shot down the idea that the Sox are being sold, as did Tony La Russa, maybe, maybe not.
Well, it means a lot more coming from the commissioner of baseball, who would be in a position to know, even though he might not be considered a chum of Jerry Reinsdorf. They have been at odds over the years, but I think there's a respect level there, and it comes from Rob Manfred. You kind of listen a little bit more closely. It also is in line with what we talked about last week, Mully, after the initial report came out from The Athletic, and I talked to somebody, as we discussed on Friday when you were out of town, that somebody in a position to know did not sense the White Sox were truly for sale, that did not know the genesis of the report, but thought this might be, number one, it could be just as simple as giving Dave Stewart advice, but number two, maybe not the worst thing in the world from the Jerry Reinsdorf perspective to get it out there that the potential of moving might help spur action at the 78. It's the oldest play in the owner's playbook to threaten to leave and create some leverage. Don't know if it worked. Don't know if that was the case, but it is part of the conversation.
Let's listen to what Rob Manfred had to say this morning on FS1.
You know, I think that the White Sox are in a difficult situation. I think the location of the stadium's tough, but, I have confidence that things are going to work out in Chicago, and we're going to continue to have two teams in Chicago.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Now, he also
He's
got confidence, but he also gave voice and credence to the idea that moving is something that sounds like it makes sense to him. Moving not necessarily out of town, but further north to the South Loop.
Well,
He said it's a difficult situation in Chicago.
Yeah.
Is he talking about the ballpark or the franchise or both?
I think he's probably talking about the fact that the White Sox have a lease at Guaranteed Rate Field until 2029?
Yes.
Maybe he means something like that.
I understand that, and I know that's what Jerry Reinsdorf has alluded to. 5 years out of your lease, help me out here. Maybe we need to talk to Mark Gannis here. Is there a sense of urgency when you are within 5 years of your lease expiring? Perhaps. Maybe that's what they're planning ahead. Maybe they're just being proactive. But to hear it from the commissioner, I think you can take – You can feel good about the fact that he reinforced the idea that two teams in Chicago is something that makes sense to him will continue.
Is Rob suggesting that the South Side is not fashionable? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, he didn't say South Side, because the South Loop is the South Side.
Is the South Loop the South Side? Let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, some people might have thoughts on that.
312-644. Hey, we've got John. John's in Joliet. John, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. No, the South Loop is not the South Side.
Okay, John. Okay.
All right. Anyway, reason why I'm calling is, guys, I mean, we're losing our legends slowly but surely, but another one with Fernando Valenzuela. I mean, just this guy alone for the Hispanic, you know, people, this guy, where how he came through the major to get to the major league was truly inspiring. But to be there and show up and show out in 1981 and do what he did just exploded. And it was just, the guy was amazing. And I was fortunate to be in the Marines at the time and stationed in Los Angeles. And to see what Fernando Mania was like firsthand, it was just like, it was amazing. But the thing is, and I'll end my call with this, the guy could hit. I mean, the guy, they brought him in to pinch hit. And when you watch guys like Paul Russell, Rick Russell for the Cubs come up, you know, and come up the bat, you look at these guys like Bartolo Colon. I mean, it's just, these guys were not baseball shaped, but the guys were the hitters. And Fernando was truly an amazing pitcher and a well-groomed baseball hitter. I'd like to hear your comments, guys. Thank you.
Great stuff, John.
Great
Thank
stuff,
you.
John. Yeah, you go back to 1981 and Fernando Valenzuela against the Dodgers or against the Yankees for the Dodgers in the World Series, won Game 3. So he was part of the last World Series between these two teams. He passes away at the age of 63. Baseball's loss, just it is a legendary loss for the Dodgers organization. John's exactly right, though. Fernando Valenzuela, I think, is the only player in Major League history to win a Silver Slugger Award, which is the best hitting pitcher, the best hitter at your position, the Gold Glove, the Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year. And so that's pretty elite company when you are the only one to do something. You don't have, you're not keeping company with anybody. You are a legend. And Fernando did it with a flair that people will miss and appreciate it then. And now we're kind of more now. It's too bad, especially this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking, frankly, because he's a young man. I mean, 63 years old is not really old. Tony La Russa turned 80 3 weeks ago. That now that's you're starting to get up there at 80, right? But I don't know. It just always kind of depresses you.
It's really sad. It's kind of ironic too this year in baseball because Fernando passes away days before the World Series between the Yankees and the Dodgers. The last time it happened, he was part of that rotation. In the same summer where Willie Mays passes away,
yeah,
days before they honor him, they go through the Rickwood Field game and all of the things that come with that. There's just a lot of symmetry going on this season, this summer, this year with loss in baseball. And it's just too it's sad that they have to now, I'm sure there will be a great tribute to Fernando game one Friday.
And John mentioned Bartolo Colon. Bartolo Colon famously hit a home run at age 42. Was he 42 when he hit the home run? I will give you two American dollars,
okay,
dollars if you tell me who he hit it off of.
Bartolo Colon hit the home run off Lance Lynn.
It was James Shields was with San Diego, and then the White Sox immediately traded a future
Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah.
Is that right?
James Shields. That's how bad he was.
So the Padres said, we can't have him anymore.
Bartolo Colon.
We need to find a sucker to take James
Shields. I don't remember the timing of the trade, but I know it was James Shields because my kid brings it up all the time. We laugh about it.
Oh, boy. I didn't know that.
Something?
Yeah, that's one other reason you want to forget James Shields.
Okay.
We should get him on the show.
What was worse?
Dustin, book James Shields, please.
Your career with the White Sox or how horrible you got it. San Diego,
including. Which claim to fame do you regret most?
That'd be bad.
Isn't that wild? James Shields. What a weird fact of God's earth.
Yeah, there's a lot of players like that and that were traded for guys who the Sox need to start changing that history this offseason. They need to make a trade that they're not going to regret. They need to make a trade that they look at as like, all right, you got the better of this deal. I don't know if that's possible with the guys that are going to trade this summer or this winter.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's clickbait, me trying to tell you that James Shields was involved.
We're getting accused of that on the text line.
I'm going down a dark hole, sadly.
Well,
is that where it all went to hell, David? Is that where my life really went sour.
Once they traded Fernando Tatis Jr. for James Shields.
I think there were some good times after that.
Yeah, there were some good times after that. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the White Sox were, when we saw Tony La Russa, he won a division title, right?
Yeah.
As a manager. That was in his mid-70s.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Can he do it again?
I don't think they go for an experienced manager. I don't think they go the Buck Showalter route. I'm sorry about that. The only reason I like Buck Showalter
is because all you got to do is hire him for a year and then you win the World Series. You bring him in and he's a complete disciplinarian. Everyone is like, you know, held, you know, he basically has his foot on their head or on their throat or something. And then when you let him up, they feel a lot better and they win the World Series.
Not winning the World Series.
Okay.
White Sox could improve by 21 games and still lose 100.
I'm going back
to the Manfred thing for a second. Did he say anything that people will jump to?
Let's listen to it one more time.
One more time.
Yeah, let's listen to it. And you're listening now for whether or not he's telling the truth. What's he saying here?
Commissioner, I'm from Chicago. I'm a Chicagoan. There's reports that the White Sox might be going up for sale. There's talk of public funding and debates on the stadium. And next year will be the 125th season of the White Sox on the South Side. I'm wondering what assurances you can give to White Sox fans that no matter what happens with a stadium or a sale, that the White Sox will be in Chicago.
Look, Chicago is an anchor city for us. I think that the White Sox are in a difficult situation. I think the location of the stadium's tough, but I have confidence that things are going to work out in Chicago, and we're going to continue to have two teams in Chicago.
Okay, good question by Danny Parkins.
Yes.
Who, our former colleague here.
Yes.
And teammate at the Score. Good question. It's the right one for people from a Chicago perspective.
Yes.
The location of the stadium's tough is what I heard and what I think will be the biggest takeaway there, because that's confirmation, permission, that is basically opening the door for them to explore the 78 as they are. I don't know what other sites they would consider in the city, but it sounds like number one, Rob Manfred thinks that they are staying in the city, but number two, he understands why they need a new stadium and ballpark.
Well, I mean, okay, that's great. You know, does he have the money to put in? I mean, doesn't the NFL help build their stadiums? Don't they invest a lot of cabbage in it? If it's an anchor type of situation, don't you need to collect some money from your television revenue?
Perhaps that will happen. Perhaps that will be the case. I don't know how realistic that is, but I do think this, when you talk about the White Sox and the commissioner agreeing that the location of the ballpark is tough, you have another team in town, different sport, the Bears, looking at a stadium in the South Loop. Is that the South Side, John, or Molly?
No.
Okay, whatever.
That's downtown.
You have
Chicago.
Urgency. You have
been?
A race to Springfield. You have the thing that we've been talking about all for months now, is that the White Sox want a new home. The Bears want a new home. I don't know if they're both going to get one.
Yeah.
Not where they want, not in the South Loop.
The governor spoke a couple days ago and basically said...
Governor Pritzker, pretty emphatic.
He gave a very long-winded no, if I recall.
You say long-winded, I say detailed.
Okay, and detailed no.
It was a detailed no, but it was a no.
It was totally a no.
And he's been consistent with that.
Yeah.
So all this very interesting to follow, but Rob Manfred this morning... I think
should Danny have asked a follow-up about the Bears? I'm joking.
Commissioner, do you agree that Caleb Williams is going to be a superstar? Yes. Is Danny wearing a number 18 jersey?
I don't know. No. Did he sell his? Didn't he buy a jersey before the number? Isn't that what happened?
If he had 15, perhaps.
Okay.
Good question, though.
Yeah,
and I'm glad
I agree.
We got that
great
covered.
Job. Well done, and let's. It worked out well. We heard from Tony La Russa and then Rob Manfred. These are some of the giants in the business.
Let's talk to Chelly now.
We've got Chris Chelios joining us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Chris Chelios.
Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score!
BetMGM ambassador, the king of sportsbooks.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in. Chelios scores! Chris Chelios has won it for Chicago.
Three-time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Chris Chelios, and he is BetMGM ambassador Chris Chelios. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. And Chris joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo Tire, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Chris, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing all right.
You know, I was reading, Chris, yesterday that Artie Where's the Party, Levshinov, had played for a month or something like that on a broken foot. And he had fractured his foot, apparently, before he had the injury where the puck came off and hit him in the foot. They looked at it and they found this earlier injury, and that's what has kept him out. And he was back at a morning skate yesterday. Good to see. But have you ever played on an injury like that? Wouldn't you notice? Wouldn't you be able to tell?
Well, honestly, I remember in Olympics in '84, it happened to me, and I had no idea. I had to put a walking cast on for the rest of the Olympics. But sometimes you get a fracture, it does not show up after, you know, sometimes 3-4 days. You know, it shows up in the x-rays, and initially it doesn't. So, yeah, and it really does affect the way you play, obviously, especially defensemen. That one, that step you lose, that quickness you lose, you know, as a defenseman. I think I went through it in one of the series against Detroit, too, with the Blackhawks in the playoffs. And you're really ineffective, and you just can't play on it.
All right, Chris, what happened to the Blackhawks' defense? I thought were going to be the last two games a little better than they have been. Two straight losses at home, not a great way to come back home. What's going on?
Well, Vancouver, obviously, one of the top teams in the league. Their speed, you know, I finally didn't have to work last night. I finally got a chance to watch the whole game. And their speed, they're well coached by Rick Tocchet. At JT Miller, they're just – everybody on their team knows where to be and the puck, where they're moving the puck before – you know, they're just a really quick team. And I thought for the most part, you know, Hawks showed a little bit of grit by coming back. They were down twice and made it a one-goal game. And then that offsides play, I don't know, you know, what they're looking at or what the referees are seeing or who they're talking to during those replays. But, you know, not to make excuses, Vancouver was a better team, but it was clearly offsides. The puck was, you know, out front by an inch. The whole crowd saw it. I don't understand. But anyway, that kind of took a little sail out of their wins. And then you could just see Vancouver control the puck. And on the back end, you know, I don't know if I want to tell you guys. I want to tell Luke Richardson before I, blurt this out.
Come on.
Quite honestly, I'm finally going to go down there and say something because I have been noticing something. And I will say it. I find that the Blackhawks and defensemen, and I had a hard time doing this, that they're always, you know, switching sides and on their off sides. And in the zone, you know, the goal Vlasic went through his legs, and, you know, they seem to be on their backhands quite a bit, and that's what happens when, you know, the right-handed defenseman gets on the left and vice versa. So I have a hard time with that. And when I played, I couldn't figure out the angles playing the offside. And I think, you know, the defenseman, I know you want to pressure and chase and get on guys, but at the same token, I think it makes it tougher on the D. And so that's one thing I noticed. They spend a lot more time in their end. And it's something that can be corrected, but they've been doing it for, you know, the couple of years here and that I've watched under this coaching staff. And it's just pretty frustrating to see that happen. You can notice, you know, three of the goals, four of the goals, the defensemen were all on the wrong sides.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating. How is he doing, Luke Richardson? You know, he benches a guy. He lets everyone know about it. He's using the tough love. I guess we'll find out if it works, but I don't know that they're – I think they've raised expectations, Chris. I think people are looking at them differently than they did a year ago.
Well, I think they expected to be better, obviously, with the signings they made, too. And last year, like I said, between, you know, poor play, youth, you know, injuries, it was really a tough year. So they went out and got some good players. And I think, like I said, for the most part, they've been playing pretty good. By no means were they outplayed as far as, like, shots on goal. And you know, we talked about Bertuzzi last week kind of having a slow start, but he could easily had a couple goals last night. He's all around the net and doing what he does. And he netted another one yesterday. Yeah. But, yeah, I think the expectations because of the signings. And, you know, it's still early. But in Vancouver's, like I said, one of the top teams. So I wouldn't be too frustrated just yet. But the key is getting better. And there's no question Luke holds these guys accountable. He wants them to work hard. And for the time being, you have to make all the right plays and put the puck behind the defenseman. It's the same old song and dance. But and then you got to score on your opportunities. The good news is the power play was clicking. You know, up to last night, it didn't, you know, do as well as it had previously. But they're going to win some games on that power play. And Bedard, you know, he's frustrated last night. They did a number on him. It was a pretty good tactic. They were kind of cross-checking him in the hip and taking him off stride quite a bit. And he got really frustrated last night, Connor.
Quickly, Chris, you picking the Bears this weekend?
Absolutely. Two young quarterbacks, but we're on a roll. So I kind of I know they're on the road. You know, Guardians, like I said, that young quarterback, I think he's hurt, aren't they? He's got an injury,
hurt,
I believe.
Injury, yes, he's got a rib.
So hopefully like one or two good hits to his rib again and Bears win. That's all. That's how it works.
Great stuff.
Take the 15. Take the 15, whatever you call it, sportsmanlike, and take them right early, though. Take the penalty early.
Do it early.
I love it. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks,
great
Charlie.
Catching up with you. That's Chris Chelios. Yeah. Take the 15.
Go after Jaden Daniels.
That's beautiful.
That is.
All right. We've got Stacey Dales next. Talk some football. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app